Welcome to We Watch Too Much TV, the weekly podcast where two real-life best friends dish on all the TV content they've been binging in their remote work-based lives. Babbling about everything from scripted television to reality TV and film, these two besties will immerse you in their quirky universe of streaming. Here are your hosts, Jaroslyn and Tanea.
What am I to do with my life? You will find it out. Don't worry. I'm supposed to know what's right. You just gotta do it your way. I can't help the way I feel. For my life has been so overprotected. Yes. Justice for Britney. Leave Britney alone.
Justice for Britney.
I don't care. She's still iconic with her living room dancing videos with her Carmen Sandiego hat and trench coat. Let her be great. Thank you.
Please.
Welcome back. Okay, period. Welcome back to We Watch Too Much TV, season 6, episode 14. We're your hosts, Jaroslyn.
And Tanea Spears, just for this week, because justice for our girl, we need to lift her up and not bring her down.
I had to ask Tanea, because y'all know Tanea handles the song choice at each start of the show, but I'm like, I gotta sing my girl, even though, funny enough, what has been stuck in my head the last week is Melissa Etheridge.
Which song? Come to My Window?
No, the other one. Good.
That is so random.
Well, what it is you know, I take my daughter to preschool, and when she's in school, I just go hang out at like Starbucks. And so when I was at Starbucks last week, I just went into my 90s rock bag playlist. And so I was listening to all the 90s rock, which, like, by the way, white people, can y'all get back to the greatness that we like grew up on, like music wise? Cause I'm like listening to Red Hot Chili Peppers and Green Day and Matchbox 20 and Sum 41 and Melissa Etheridge and Alanis Morissette. And it's just amazing music. It really got like me in my zone. And that Melissa Etheridge song has literally been stuck in my head since last week.
Gotta give it to your mama.
I was listening to that. Give it away now. Yeah, like classic. And yes, Melissa, Come Through My Window. I also listened to that. And Oasis, Wonderwall, because maybe
like, you're gonna be the one that saves
and
me.
And it's like, all that really needs to happen is the children just need to get off of the game systems, off of their phones, go into the garage with their friends, and just start banging instruments around. That's what they used to do. And that's why us millennials were lucky enough to like grow up in this era of amazing music, because it was across the board of just whether you were listening to rock or hip hop or R&B or pop music. It was all just really, really good stuff, because people weren't so distracted and following formulas and sounds, and that's kind of what we've gotten bogged down with.
Yeah, there was no such thing as going viral. It was just kind of, and you had to be good. Yep. I saw one artist do an interview that talked about like just younger artists of today's age. They don't have like artist development. Mm-hmm. They don't really do, and that's going to kind of go into one of my weekly grabs, but they don't really invest. Like, you could have a viral song and just become an artist. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of artists like A&R, like artists and repertoire. That doesn't really exist anymore. So
And it's unfortunate, and we see the difference. So you tease the weekly grab, but before we get into it, one, don't forget, like and subscribe, rate and review, follow us on social media at We Watch Too Much TV. That's TEA with the letter V. And, you know, it's Women's History Month, so we've been having questions tied to womanhood. This one, it's not even so womanly, but it's just, what era would you have absolutely dominated in, and which one would have had you fighting for your life? What do you think about that, best friend?
I'm going to say the same era for both, for both questions. I feel like if I was our college age, like 18 to 21 in the 90s, I would have dropped out and been a fly girl. My obsession with New Jack Swing is like, or new that whole early 90s, Teddy Riley, like Bell Biv DeVoe, Babyface, LaFace Records. I'm really obsessed with that era. My dog's name is literally Nino Brown after the hit character from my favorite 1990s movie, New Jack City. I say I would have thrived because I would have been on either of the spectrum. I mean, like I would have either been like a fly girl in the 90s in LA taking dance classes, or I probably could have been Pookie in them. I don't think I would
Right.
have got caught up.
Either way,
But
right.
I would have been either, like, I would have been fighting for my life because I remember what my first, like, male therapist was an older black guy in his 90s. And he told me how infiltrated black neighborhoods were in the 80s and 90s with drugs. The way people might do marijuana or cigarettes, that was coke and crack. So he was like, it was a harder thing to kind of resist until the big war on drugs. They did a really big swipe through of that. So I don't want to say that I would have done that, but it would have been very, very prevalent in my life. But if I could relive or be alive at any era, it would have been the 90s. What about you?
I mean, just responding to that, that makes me think of that one scene from the show Snowfall, which was an amazing show, created by the late great John Singleton. And it
Shout
really put it into perspective of how easily accessible it was to get hooked on these type of drugs, because it was one girl, gorgeous girl that Franklin Saint had a crush on, and she was just at a party, right? Like, what, who doesn't go to parties as a teenager? And she got past a joint and it was laced. And then boom, you just they the way they showed it, where it's like she took the pull, the first hit, and you see her pupils just kind of go. And then from there, you know, she turned into a crackhead. And this is a young teenage girl. And it was like that, you know, very easily to just get introduced to something and it just drastically changes your life around. So yeah, it could have gone either way. I would have gone a few more years ahead of you in regards to what decade I would have dominated in. I say the 80s because I still, you know, my dance moves, they work for the 80s.
They do. She is not, she would have been doing
I'm
the
not
Ronda
talking
Rap
about
at every
Fly Girl dance.
party.
I'm not talking about Fly Girl. I am talking about RuPaul and the Love Shack video. That is how I dance. That is how I thrive. Hence why I love Britney Spears. That's my spirit animal. I still dance like that. And so I would have been done very well for myself in the 80s. Okay, I could have probably attracted myself a rich husband and you know, been in like a dynasty, a real life dynasty life. And which era would have had me fighting for my life? Any era from like the Jim Crow era.
Oh yes, keeping
You
our
know,
eyes on a prize.
as a black woman, I mean, it just would have been rough. As well as a black woman with a voice and passion and you know, it's just I'd have been, you know, it'd have been hard for me, but I'd have been out there on the front lines with Martin and Malcolm.
Yeah, we would have been on that Selma
Oh
march. We
yeah.
would have been
Front
right there.
and center with our sorors. Absolutely. But yeah, guys, thank you for letting us get with our rants on our Women's History Month topics. Sanae had already teased the weekly grab that she's going to get into some more stuff on artist development. So on that note, let's just get right into it. Here is our weekly grab. Okay, best friend, what's first on your weekly grab?
I mean, since it's so prevalent, we could just talk about this first. So, a big part of watching television to me is YouTube. I feel like YouTube is a very, very big part of my TV rotation. There has been a recent resurgence of one of my favorite early 2000 bands. Before we had Day 26, before we had Danity Kane, before we had D-A, B-A-N-D, there was O Town, okay?
Okay, period.
O Town. It was Ashley, Everett, Dan, Jacob, and Trevor. Lou Pearlman, the creator of NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. did a whole new kind of reality series. It was like America's Next Top Model, who actually Ken Mock was a producer of that. So he got a lot of the America's Next Top Model ideas from there.
Right.
They decided to find a new boy band in the late 1990s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. Actually, it was the height of NSYNC and Backstreet Boys suing Lou Pearlman. But they were like, okay, we're going to try this again. So O-Town is currently on tour. They're doing big things. Four of the five members are back together. They've been touring for the past year or two.
Who's not back?
Ashley. He wants to be a fitness model. It just
Fitness model? Aren't they like 50?
Yeah. Well, Ashley was the baby. He was the Justin or the Nick of the group. So, but he's very much into like GNC Fitness, has his own like powder protein brand. He has like a twin pack. He did Masked Singer like last year or something like that.
Oh, okay.
But he doesn't, according to him, he just wanted to try something new and he doesn't like to do the same thing all the time, which is fine. But the four of them go on a tour every year. And they usually go on like a pop 2000s tour with like Chris from NSYNC and the one guy Left Alive from LFO. Okay, so they do a tour. So he does a whole thing and he just sings all the LFO songs with the sneakers of the two guys because literally it's only one left.
Oh
anyway,
my gosh, that would make me cry.
Yeah, and literally everybody, because he wasn't the lead singer, but he just does it in memory of them and that's he asks right. different oh my gosh, singers I to can. Come. That it's so sweet. Cry.
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to try to find one of their close shows when they come adjacent to New York or New Jersey. Anyway, they have been doing a rewatch series on YouTube where they rewatch live the process of them getting voted into the group and give you their behind the season, like behind the series, like intake.
Yeah.
It has been giving me life, best friend. Oh, it is like, it's just been giving me, because I remember watching that in real time in 2000 when it was on Channel 7 before MTV.
Absolutely.
So, you hear them talk about how three of them already knew, well, two of them knew they were in the group. Jacob and Trevor, they kind of knew. Before Dan was in the group, he
Jacob
was actually
was my favorite,
eliminated.
By the way.
Yes. I love Trevor. Shout out to the half black boy, Trevor. I love Trevor because he was a good dancer, but he was not a singer. And people were like not trying to vouch for him, but he really worked on his vocals and found his kind of like tone. So that you talk about Dan, who ended up joining the band, was eliminated in the top eight.
Yeah.
He went home. They had the five of them. They had Ikaika, which a lot of people forget. Ikaika was in the group. Jacob hated him. Jacob felt in his heart. He was saying that he was like, I knew he wasn't going to stay because when they were at the top, like when they were like about to pick the group, he went home for like a month.
Right.
But Lou was so adamant about Ikaika being in the group. He wouldn't care who was in the group. Ikaika was making that group. He left for a month, came back. Jacob was like, if you're in the group, I'm not in the group. Mind you, they 2021. And then, he came back. They forgave each other, quote unquote. Ikaika was the first name called. Jacob said, I knew Ikaika was going to make it first because I knew that they wanted the TV drama behind like me being in the group with him. And 30 days later, he quit.
Yeah.
So they only have 10 episodes in. They literally watch it. They vent it out like a TV room. They watch it in real time. They give you behind the scenes. They talk about the two guys that didn't make it and went to like another small lived group of Lou Pearlmans, but it's just funny. It's nostalgic. It gives me a sense of peace with everything going in the world right now. It's just boy band drama and like they're still dancing. They're still out on tour. So shout out to Old Town. They always show love.
Old Town and Eden's Crush.
Get over yourself, goodbye.
Those were the
I loved all of those pop shows because I loved
like pop competition shows. And
I knew I would never do it.
So locked in. Like we watched those shows. Like we were ready, like the way y'all see now with the Top Model documentary, like it was a phenomenon. We were kids and
there was no social media. You had to watch it in real time.
You had to tune in. You had to watch it. It wasn't going to be a rerun. You couldn't pause it.
And we couldn't afford TiVo. So we wasn't recording it.
Right. Nobody had that. Like nobody had TiVo. So it was like literally watching live. And then you go to school the next day to talk about it with your friends. And
it was such a
precious time to be alive. But that actually sounds good. Yeah, the nostalgia. I was just talking about that today with my editor about just, you know, nostalgia being a big business now because we're, you know, millennials are at that age now where we have, you know, we're older. We have that money that we're willing to spend to you know, kind of tap into things that just make us feel good, which for the most part is things that remind us of yesteryear.
Justice for Britney. So beautiful. Yes, justice for Britney. They talked about going on tour with her. They had a platinum selling album. And I just love that they're still together. They're still rocking out. So shout out to Old Town. Yeah, I already know that y'all are going to be lit.
When I went to the No Strings Attached tour, Old Town was the opening act. And what's it? What was her name? Kind of faded, but I feel all right.
Oh, Soul Decision. Yes. Think about making my move tonight.
And
Dream. Gonna hold in my butt. Yes. I like the way you're making me move. Yes.
Soul Decision shout out to O-Town. And Dream were the opening acts. O-Town was opening for Britney Spears. I wanted to go. It's my biggest life regret is not going to see Britney Spears. You know, the going to the I did again tour, but honestly, that's not my fault. That's my mother's fault because she refused to buy tickets to two tours in 1 year. But it's like, come on, that was the year of pop greatness. Like, it's not my fault that No Strings Attached and Oops, I Did It Again came out this year, but I need to go.
Yes.
Okay.
It was beautiful. What's first on your weekly grab?
Okay. So first on my weekly grab is a film. I watched it on Hulu. It is called Killing Faith. It's a modern Western starring, well, it's not a mod, it's a Western. So it's based in 1849, Arizona, you know, the Wild West, but it is modern, meaning that it's not an old traditional Western. It's new age Western. And it's starring the gorgeous DaWanda Wise. And we know her from Spike Lee's series, She's Gotta Have It. That's when I first was like, oh my gosh, she's gorgeous with those gorgeous eyes. And then she was also in Jurassic World Dominion, I believe. She plays a free Black woman who gave birth to a lily white blonde girl. Yes, by way of, you know, essay, of course. This is 1849 we're talking about. But this little girl that is her daughter and, you know, was clearly conceived through some unfortunate circumstances. So there's some evil in this girl. And so this girl has the ability to kill anything that she touches. So she has to wear these gloves or else if she touches it, like a horse. You see, the movie starts with her petting a horse and the horse drops dead. So she has to be, you know, you're seeing DaWanda's character make sure that this little girl is really careful not to touch people or living things. And so she sets out on this journey to find a doctor to cure the girl. But again, this is the Wild West and it's extremely dangerous. So they come across a number of violence and turmoil along the way, which my thing, you know, I kept thinking is, DaWanda, take her gloves off and just let her touch these mofos.
Kill them all.
Kill everybody. Why are you letting them tie you up and punch you? And you're just seeing them go through it. Okay. There is a guy that is helping them. And, you know, so you're just kind of watching, you know, the guy becomes really passionate about saving this little girl because he lost his own daughter. So he kind of has this, like, you know, it's like tie into his own personal grief that he's dealing with. Even at a point when DaWanda loses, you know, she's ready to get rid of her daughter because of, you know, how this girl like has some evil in her. What I really love about the film is, again, since it's a modern Western, it's, you know, the cinematic element of the film, you're really able to see the kind of the beauty and highlights of America, you know, America during that time. Remember it wasn't electricity. So in the home scenes, it's dimly lit, you know, because everybody had to have like a lantern, or you're seeing somebody walk with the lantern. So just even the simplicity of the design of like a room, I'm into those kind of things. In addition to the landscape, right? Like, I've always recommend anybody, if you have not yet, to take a road trip in this country, even at times like now with the climate, the political climate, the social climate, kind of getting away from the news and actually in front of real people, real Americans. And you'll, one, see the beauty of this country, because this is such a beautiful country.
It's so diverse.
And I guarantee you, they're not going to make you feel the way the news makes you feel, you know, like you just get in front of actual people. And most times people want to connect, you know, people genuinely, like I've had so many in my travels, my domestic travels. I've had so many white people that genuinely just want to talk to me mm-hmm. because they know I'm Black and they want to hear my take on things and even ask questions in a safe way where they don't feel attacked for being curious or get called racist because they genuinely just want to know because they grew up in an area where there's no Black people, you know, so they don't mm-hmm. know. And you don't know what you don't know, you know, so... Again, these are the things that when you watch a Western type film, it reminds you of those elements because a Western is America. And it's one of our earliest art forms when it comes to film because Westerns were always like super, super popular films. So yeah, check out Killing Faith. It's actually really good. I honestly would give it, I'm a hard judge. So I give it a 7.8 out of 10.
Okay, that's not bad. That's not, I've heard worse, you know. Yes. It sounds pretty interesting, but also like, could be better. Let them kill people.
I would say that my favorite Western, modern Western, well, of course, Django. Django's a Western. Mm-hmm. The Harder They Fall, which was on Netflix. Yeah. But of course, both of those films have tie-ins to Black liberation. But it's way better storytelling, in my opinion. And not just because I'm Black, but because hell yeah. Okay.
Hell yeah.
What's next on your weekly grab?
Next on my weekly grab is a new season of one of my favorites with my favorite chef host, Miss Kristen Keesh, and the newest season of Top Chef.
Yeah.
This season they are in the Carolinas.
Oh.
And they start off fresh. There's a pair of Black twins on this episode.
Ooh.
I mean, this season, there's a boyfriend and girlfriend couple on this episode.
Oh, wow.
There are some people from the Philippines. There are two Black African queens. One used to be a model. The other one has been a chef all her life from Africa. Mm-hmm. I just always love the diversity on Top Chef. Yeah, they just pick the best of the best. Really good people. So the first episode, they start at like a NASCAR race. And the challenge is they have to finish. The mini challenge is they have to finish their appetizer meal before the NASCAR drivers do 23 laps. Oh. Like it needs to be plated and done, and they're in teams of three. And it's also the like mid of summer. So it's like 100 degrees outside. They're cooking outside and they have to finish this before the 23rd lap. So you kind of see the competition coming out early. You see the twin brothers try to separate themselves, and you see the boyfriend and girlfriend who also own a restaurant together. You see them kind of like try to separate themselves.
Ooh.
So then after they pick that, they also pick the next challenge, which is the sweet potato, which I did not know was the Carolina's official like veggie.
Oh.
They all get a different type of sweet potato. I didn't even know it was more than one type of sweet potato. But there's like there's like five different types of sweet potatoes that you could cook a multitude of ways. So they each get there's a five teams of three. They each get a sweet potato to cook a different way. One of the chefs kind of has a mental breakdown because she wasn't able to plate at time, on time. And Kristen sees it and she kind of stops before the judge even gets to the table. She notices the beginning of a mental breakdown, just kind of puts in the corner, asks her what's wrong. The chef says, you know, I didn't plate in time. And she's like, it's okay. You're still amazing. Don't worry about it. You know, do what you can. Because Kristen saw, like, had someone not just made sure she was okay, she probably wouldn't have made it to the judge's table.
Aww.
So I just want to applaud Kristen for seeing that.
Yeah.
Acting quickly and kind of taking the show and the competition out of it. Like nobody wants to have a mental health breakdown on national television.
Absolutely.
So I just applaud you. Shout out to you, Kristen, for doing that. And ultimately, that's not even the chef that went home. So I could already tell by the challenges is going to be a great season. Yeah. And also they're changing Last Chance Kitchen. So the first two people nominated out do not get to go to Last Chance Kitchen. So,
oh damn.
They're only focusing on, I think the top, I think it's 15, only 13 get to compete in Last Chance Kitchen. So the first two out, sorry.
Well, it's, I honestly, it sounds like a good season. I have to catch up. That is one show I like, and it's good that Kristen is back in her element because she is no damn faithful.
Listen, everybody can. I'm learning that from even like House of Villains. All of these like other reality stars that try other shows, it's competitive. You can't just be on any show. Yeah. So I agree. This is her element, being a host and cooking.
Yes. Because she
stay in your lane.
And remember, I met her in person. She is such a sweetheart. And I do believe because we know how she, you know, she's naturally a sweet person. I do believe that she was able to watch the season back and even probably see some of the things people are saying online. And it was like a teachable moment for her where she was like, oh, you know what? Maybe I kind of probably just was swooned by Rob because he's just hot. And, you know, even though I don't care for Rob's, but you know, everyone kind of just fell for his charm. And sometimes you have to just kind of ask yourself why. But yeah, shout out to Kristen. I'm looking forward to, you know, what's so funny. So, you know, I'm always into like the baking competition, spring baking, holiday baking championship. So spring baking championship actually starts, I believe this week, the new season, but because they took too long, I went back and I watched like season 10 from 2023. And binged it in like 4 days. So
now that's how good it was. One.
But yes, I'm ready for some baking competition. So yes, baking and cooking competition shows are in full swing. But okay, getting into what's next on my weekly grab. It is a series, a Marvel series. You know, I am into the action and fantasy of it all. So I am a Marvel girly. And it's called Wonder Man. It's a short series that came out earlier this year on Disney Plus, and it follows an aspiring actor / stuntman. So he's of course in LA. His name is Simon Williams. He's played by Yahya Abdul-Mateen, if you know him from the modern Candyman films. He's been in a couple of stuff. He's a nice, hot, sexy chocolate.
Yeah, we don't watch Candyman, but go ahead.
I do. And it was a great film.
Nope, I'm still scared ever since the 90s.
They included the late, great Tony Todd in it as well. But yeah, so you're seeing Simon. Basically, he loses out on acting gigs because of, like, he kind of is just a bit too passionate. And he'll offer his own unsolicited suggestions to like directors and producers. And it's just like, no, don't do that. And so he kind of just, you know, shoots himself in the foot, so to say, with his mouth and just doing too much. And so he keeps kind of losing out, even though he's been like working hard at trying to make it big in Hollywood for over a decade. So you're kind of seeing those dynamics between his family, frustration with him still not making it, being broke, his booking agent being frustrated with him, always losing jobs, and him just being frustrated with himself, you know, but he gets this chance to read for this role of Wonder Man. And in doing that, he bumps into a character, a man named Trevor Slattery, who is played by the great Ben Kingsley. He's famous for winning an Oscar for playing Gandhi back in the 80s. So he's a great actor, British, of course. So, you know, he's and trained, started in theater. So, but in the show, Trevor Slattery is like he's an actor who fell off, right? Like he's someone who's a veteran actor. Everyone knows him, but he kind of fell off and it's like, oh, what happened to Trevor type thing. And so he could also use a big break himself, you know, to kind of redeem himself, but he takes a liking to Simon. And so you're kind of seeing him take on this kind of mentor role, and in being around Simon, he actually starts to see that Simon actually has these superpower abilities. He has this extreme strength that unearths itself whenever Simon gets really mad. And because of this, Simon, you know, and his family knows, but Simon is like kind of keeping it harbored inside of him. You know, it's like the secret he's living with. And because of that, that's where he's kind of holding himself from back in acting, because, you know, in acting, you got to really put all of yourself out there. in order to tap into these roles. And because he's scared to put himself out there and potentially, you know, punch through someone or break a entire set, because that's what he has the ability to do with his hands. And so you're seeing Trevor just mentor him in ways that it helps both of them in the end with like securing roles, as well as like this friendship that they have. And what it is because, you know, with Marvel, you're thinking Superman. I mean, not Superman. Superman's DC. My bad. You're thinking Spider-Man, X-Men, you know, Thor, the Avengers. These are all like superhero type movies. And then they do like spinoff shows on Disney Plus. With Wonder Man, it's more of a human element. It's more character based. It's more relatable. When you're watching his story. And so I'm interested to see what they're going to do with this character. I'm hoping that it gets a season two, because there is a tie-in, right? Like the Trevor Slattery character, he's already appeared in other Marvel films. So, you know, it's always the Marvel universe. So there's other tie-ins. They are saying that Wonder Man isn't going to appear in the Avengers because he's not like a superhero, but I'm wondering.
He's a black superhero. That's what he is.
I mean, well, we have Black Panther. So it's but I'm wondering what they're going to do with this character. There's a lot of ways that they could take it. But I'm happy that they at least introduced it. And it's really for someone, if you're not into all the Marvel action of it, this is one that you can digest if you're more into just good acting and storytelling. It's relatable. So Wonder Man on Disney Plus, check it out for sure. What's last on your weekly grab?
Last on my weekly grab is a show I just literally cannot get enough of. I will sing its praises until it ends, and that is The Pitt. This season 2, episode 9. This episode specifically stuck out to me for two reasons. One, I love the take that they're doing in real time on ICE and this deportation situation. You see a black little boy who's 12 years old who gets admitted to the ER because he blew off his ring and pinky finger playing with firecrackers with the neighbors. His blood alcohol level tested like he was drunk. And of course, anytime someone underage comes in like that, they have to call Child Protective Services. His sister is his guardian, who is 22 years old, but she's a student full-time and works full-time. They keep asking for the parents, come to find out their mother and father was deported to Haiti. And they want the son to stay there until he finishes high school. The sister did not sign up to be a mom, but she wants to follow her parents' wishes. But you just see the strain it takes on them. You see the social worker really try to help out the family, but it's just really, really sad and unfortunate what this administration is doing to young kids, and just how it's not just quote unquote criminals. It's literally anybody black and brown. There's also another storyline with a young mother, maybe in her early 40s, with two kids and a husband. She has terminal lung cancer, never smoked. You can tell she's physically and mentally tired. The husband does not want to give up on his wife. He wants to take her home to die with the deaf doula. She feels like she's a burden on her family, and she's just ready to let go. And so you kind of see one of the doctors kind of help her through that and navigate her into this space. And it was just so sad. You know, I cry all the time at the damn shows. She asked the nurse, because she said, I know you've probably seen a lot of death. And the nurse is like, I've had my share. And she said, can you give me any pointers? I've never died before. And I boohooed like a baby. And the last storyline that kind of is just, I'm a fan of SVU. I've watched SVU a lot, but one thing they don't touch on is what happens when a victim of sexual assault kind of goes into a hospital. And you see in real time the process of it. You see a young girl come in. It was a guy she knew. He was drunk. She does the excuse, oh, it was a mistake. It's just her friend. And you see her navigating through the hardships of trying to go through a rape kit. And then you also see how the nurse handles it, how many tests you have to take. You see the delicate nature you have to handle it, how brave women are when they do that. You see the injustice of the judicial system, because the one rape kit is over 2 weeks old and you have to get it processed within 3 days in order for it to be valid. So it was just gut-wrenching just to see that and to see that aspect of it, to see just a woman want to be done right and kind of fight with, like, do I be honest and, like, do I tell the truth or do I not? There's just so many storylines in this. It's not like Grey's. I've been seeing a lot of, like, online chatter. It's like Grey's, it's two different things to me. You know about their private life, but it's not based on their private life, where Grey's is very private life based. This is about the people that visit the hospital, and then through those visits, you get insight into the nurses and the doctors. So The Pitt, you better win every award. Every award you are nominated for, you deserve. It's just a gut-wrenching show. I needed to go on for 20 seasons. The Pitt on HBO Max.
I love hearing you talk about it. It just further confirms for me that I will not watch the show.
It's such a good show.
Yeah, it's a tearjerker, and it actually brings me into Last on My Weekly Grab. Last on My Weekly Grab is a show I already talked about. I actually talked about it last week, but Paradise season two. Listen, oh my gosh, the show is so amazing. Great storytelling, great writing, and of course, great acting. But episode four, okay, I'm not putting this on my piss poor because it's not a piss poor. It's so good, but I just can't, okay? Because Sterling V. K. Brown, okay? I'm going to need you to keep that making us cry stuff over on This Is Us. Please and thank you. We don't do that here, okay? Paradise is a sci-fi mystery thriller, okay?
Not for the tears. No, don't spoil it because I'm still going to catch up. I promise.
Let me tell you how I was legit bawling at the end of episode four, okay? I told you how season two kicked off, introducing us to this character who is surviving this apocalypse outside of the bunker that we know was government made, where only a certain select group of people got to live in this bunker, you know, with the president and government officials. But this woman is outside the bunker. Well, you know, she's in her own bunker, right? Because at this point, it's the apocalypse. So people have had to create, the people who survived it are surviving, right? So how do you survive the apocalypse? You create a bunker. And she ends up meeting Sterling K. Brown. Remember, she got pregnant by a guy that is he's part of this group that is trying to get into the government created bunker. And there's a whole story there. There's a whole tie-in with his character and Sterling K. Brown's character, but you got to watch the show. But yeah, so remember this woman I told you that she had studied to be a doctor, but she just didn't become one. But again, she's really smart. And so you see her give birth, and the way it ends is just so freaking heartbreaking. And you're just not expecting it to go the way that it goes. And it goes that way. And it was just like, I don't do this. I don't cry.
She does not like TV shows that are emotional. She hates it. She does not like it.
I can watch a movie, and they're not my favorite movies, right? Like, I only really watched the end of Titanic like once or two times. You know, like the end of like, what's that movie with Macaulay Culkin?
Home Alone or My Girl?
My Girl. Home Alone. But yeah.
Listen, movies, Home Alone make me cry too.
Movies that make me cry, it's just something that I'll just, Dead Presidents. It's like, I'm not watching, like, you already made me cry, Chris, when Chris Tucker died. I ain't watching it again. Okay. So a TV show where it's repetitive, that's why I had to check out if This Is Us, because This Is Us is amazing. You know, great writing, great acting, but it's just like, yo,
you're gonna cry almost every episode. Because why they did that to Jack?
And there's people like Taneya in the world, right? Like Taneya loves these emotion pulling shows. She watches television to cry. I am the exact opposite. I am literally watching television to escape. I don't want to cry. So if it turns into something that is like making me cry too much, it's like, yeah, I'm checking out. So This Is Us, I never made it past season one. Watched the whole first season, but I was like, I can't do this show anymore. It's just too emotional. But what I have hope for with Paradise is it's not going to go that way. Because of the fact that it is a sci-fi and thriller and mystery, and you're trying to figure out, oh, who killed this person and why is this person killing all these people and stuff. But it's like, damn, the way Sterling DK Brown is just able to pull that emotion. That's how, you know, he gets booked. He stays booked and busy because he is that guy. Okay. He is just going to do it every single time on screen. And it's just like, oh my gosh, the way that episode ended. It's so funny because I'm actually talking about it right now with people on Twitter because I said they ain't have to make us cry like that in episode 4. And it got 60 likes. All these people are commenting. Someone said, no, they didn't. This is us used to do it like that. You see, everyone says it.
So I mean, y'all want justice for the tearjerkers. Justice.
No, leave it on the pit.
Oh my gosh, you don't even understand. That show make me cry every week.
Yeah, Tanea, you gotta check out Paradise. It is, I mean, you're not so much really into like sci-fi and thriller, but you are into like at least good storytelling, and it's good. And you are a fan of Sterling K. Brown. So
yes, that's Sterling DK Brown.
Sterling DK Brown. And it's only in his second season, and it's you know, it's still very early in the season, so you have time to catch up. But yeah, oh, I love it. This is like my new favorite show that's on right now. I'm like every week, I'm like, okay, where's the next episode? Where's the next episode? I'm like,
that's ready. Me in the pit. Look at our last weekly grabs being shows we cannot miss.
Yes, yes. But yeah, guys, don't forget to like and subscribe, rate and review, follow us on social media at We Watch Too Much TV. And enough of talking about the tearjerkers. Okay, let's get a little mean. Get out a little anger and aggression. People that have pissed us off this week. Let's get to our piss poor performance. Okay, who you pissing on, best friend?
Ooh, this piss poor makes me so upset. I am pissing on Jonathan and Anna from last season's The Amazing Race. And let me tell you why I'm pissing on them. I spoke about them in last season's podcast when we watched Too Much TV, because I spoke about how rude and disgusting Jonathan was to his wife. How anytime they were not number one, he blamed her. It was her fault. He was just the most unsupportive partner. Forget husband. He was just an unsupportive partner when she's struggling, when it's not even her fault. Sometimes it's just a really hard challenge. He was disgusting. Can you tell me why after season 37, season 38 done came and gone, they have decided to sue CBS, Paramount, Disney, and Jerry Bruckheimer Films for $8 million for defamation of character, saying that it was edited wrong, the couple was falsely portrayed as abusive, and production defamed him through manipulating editing and omissions. Now, sir, production can't put that together.
Okay.
Sir, first of all, everybody forgot about them. Like, nobody, it was a whole season that came and gone. For you to now make people want to watch it and see how horrible you are, that's disgusting. Two, I noticed it was his idea. Anna does not have a backbone, and we saw it through the show. You know that this was his idea, trying to clean his whole image, but he was a disgusting person, and I pray that production releases unedited versions of him being bad. Because I've seen editing in, like, when you do reality TV shows and they, like, edit drama, but there were, like, legit, I will never forget. I think she had to climb a tree or do something. He was like, you're just so slow. Like, why are you acting like this? Like, I don't even know why I'm your partner. You cannot blame that on production. That is you. So I am just disgusted that Jonathan decided to do this. I'm disgusted that they're asking for $8 million in reputational, emotional, and professional harm. If y'all don't sit all the way,
like, literally, down. Several seats.
Literally, they came in third place. The show ended May of last year. That's when the last episodes aired. And they're going to lose. They're not going to win this. So Jonathan and Anna, I'm pissing on y'all. Y'all need to get off of, maybe I should go on House of Villains. But y'all are not going to win this lawsuit. Boo you. Who are you pissing on?
Yeah, they might not even get on no other show if people see they like to sue.
What? So. They are seeking a jury trial, punitive damages.
They won't be on booked on anything else.
No. And you could tell this was his idea. Anna wouldn't think about this. This is all him thinking about his ego. And that's how you know that this is fraudulent. Who are you pissing on this week?
Two entities. First, of course, I'm pissing on Timothy Chalamet.
Chalamet.
Sir, boy, no, you a man, okay? He literally waited until the day after Oscar voting was complete to show his true little jerk colors, okay? There was always something about him that rubbed me the wrong way. I will say that I like about him is that he's from New York. He's from New York. He went to LaGuardia. So I was always rooting for him. But all he's now proven is just like some of other LaGuardia alums that we know, like female rappers who shall not be named. Not Lady Gaga, who also went to LaGuardia. But it's like, you're a little turd, okay?
Not a turd.
You're a little pompous turd, all right? For you to put Matthew D. McConaughey in an awkward position by saying something so just, to me, disrespectful to the true art form of ballet and opera, which to me, without those two art forms, there wouldn't be any film. You know, like these were the original art forms. What are you talking about? Like you're thinking of you got to think back to medieval times and Shakespeare, actors had to get on stage.
Yeah.
And perform. That is what you are crapping on top of the fact that your mom and your sister are both ballerinas. And then you're from New York.
Yeah.
No one from New York disrespects all the forms of art. We respect art. We're from New York. Like we are surrounded by Broadway. You know, by live performances, you could even see stuff just going on the train. You'll see amazing art just literally walking through the train station. You'll see people playing music. You'll see people dancing on the train, singing, all of it. You're singing opera. I've seen opera singers in the train station and I'm just like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. I will say I've been to the symphony orchestra. I've gone there. I've never seen a real super ballet show. I've only saw Cats. My
parents, Cats at all.
Listen, hey, okay, Tony Award winner, get into it. Okay, you know my parents are Broadway fanatics, so you know when we were kids, they only took us to the things they felt we would enjoy, which was Cats and what's it the when it's Scrooge and he has to see the three people on Christmas Eve.
Mm.
You know what I'm talking about. The famous Christmas story. Isn't it called A Christmas Story? A Christmas Story.
Oh, yes.
A Christmas Story. Yes, with Scrooge.
Yes.
So those are the two that I saw on Broadway as a kid. And, you know, in Cats, of course, they're ballet trained dancers. So that's the time I could think of seeing classically trained dancers on stage. But it was gorgeous. And because of what Timothy Chalamet said, it actually made me think oh my gosh, I've never booked gone to see a ballet show in New York City where I'm from. So I'm going to. And I think what he just did was just unknowingly revived the opera and ballet industry. I think more people are probably interested in supporting them now because you just saw this little jerk kid, which I love the joke that Colin Jost said on SNL. That Timothy Chalamet said opera and ballet is dead, and he said that while on a press run for his movie about ping pong.
Nobody asked you what was the relevance of you doing that? You can not downplay something just because you don't like it, but it just was bro,
it came out of nowhere, and
it came out of nowhere
because Matthew McConaughey was trying to be diplomatic and he was like, hey, you know, if that's how you feel. So some people were like, oh, and Matthew agreed. No, he did not. This is a seasoned actor here. He clearly, when Timothy first did the comment, you could see Matthew got serious and he looked annoyed. And then it was when Timothy said that horrible jerky joke where he was like, oh, I just lost 14 cents of viewership, And that's where Matthew was like, heh, heh. He gave an awkward laugh. And he's like, hey, if that's how you feel. It's like, no, Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, Matthew's a professional.
Yeah, he's a professional. He is not, he's from the era of professionalism. They don't do that. So to me, Timothée Chalamet, he just ruined himself. This is, he's too early. Remember, I've talked about Wonka on the show. I actually liked the film. I think he did great in the film, but I didn't think like he was, you know, he wasn't like Gene Wilder, you know, like the original Willy Wonka. To me, Gene Wilder, there was no one else to play Willy Wonka. Like,
and he wasn't better than Johnny Depp because Johnny Depp did.
No, like that's what I'm saying. I like the film Wonka because it was a good film. It was already built off of like he walked into a good film. The Gene Wilder already brought Willy Wonka to life. Everyone loves Willy Wonka. It is a classic film, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, I'm talking about, right? So there's been variations of Willy Wonka over the years with Johnny Depp, which was really weird, but that one was directed by Tim Burton. So all Timothée Chalamet did was walk into a role that was like the prerequisite to this character. They're telling us the backstory of how Willy Wonka became, how Willy Wonka got his chocolate factory. So it was already going to be a great film, right? They could have given that role to anyone. It wasn't a role to me that Timothy brought to life. That it was like, I think it could have gone to anyone else. So to me, Timothy is still in a position where he has to prove himself.
Yes.
I have yet, till this day, me and my husband, we have yet to see the movie Dune. Why? Every time we try, we fall asleep. Every time. I fell asleep twice. So I'm not even going to watch part two because I have yet to see part one because I fall asleep. So Timothy, to me, you have yet to really have that defining role. I have no interest in watching Marty Supreme because it's about ping pong. Like what the, I don't give a damn about that. So he's not in a position. This isn't Leonardo DiCaprio after Titanic, right? Like you're not in that position to shit on any art form. So for you to do that so early on in your career, to me, I think you just effed yourself. And I want to see how you're going to potentially try to redeem yourself, because I think you just turned off a lot of people from wanting to book you for roles, and even roles that you're probably already booked for. You probably have filmmakers and producers scrambling to probably try to find someone else to replace you. And trust and believe, there's another Timothée Chalamet. Okay.
Hello. It's too many good young white actors.
Like, you know,
too many. Chalamet.
Okay. And then second on my piss poor list, it's real quick. Okay. I watched this movie Begonia on Peacock because it kept popping up, and it's Emma Stone, and I like Emma Stone. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna watch it. It's about aliens. You know, I'm into weird shit. Okay. I'm not gonna lie. It's a 2-hour movie. Y'all know I don't like long movies. I really don't prefer a movie that's longer than 90 minutes. I can push it to 1 hour and 45. When it's 2 hours, it's like, okay, it depends. If I'm going to give it the time, anything over 2 hours, I don't like, which is why I still haven't watched One Battle After Another or the other Leonardo DiCaprio movie that it came out with. Cause I'm just like, Leo will not act in a movie that's not shorter than 3 hours. So Begonia is 2 hours. Because it's 2 hours, I was already skimming through the movie because it's all dialogue. It's just like talking. I'm acting Emma Stone. I'm Emma Stone and I'm an actress. And I'm this guy, which let me look up his name because he's actually a good actor. So pretty much what it is it's these two guys, you know, they're kind of like weird sci-fi type guys, but they are convinced that Emma Stone's character is an alien. And so they kidnap her. Mind you, Emma Stone's character is this successful Jesse Plemons. Great actor. So Jesse Plemons' character and Aiden Delba's character, they kidnap Emma Stone's character because they're convinced she's an alien. Emma Stone's character is this like basically female Steve Jobs, like female Jeff Bezos. You know, like she is a powerhouse businesswoman executive running a top like company. So she's very in demand. So for them to kidnap her, she's like, what the hell are y'all doing? Like, you're not going to get away with this. However, okay, so they kidnap her, they shave off all her hair because they believe that she can communicate with her extraterrestrial planet through her hair. So they shave off all her hair and they make her cover herself in acetaminophen cream so she can't, you know, tap into her alien whatever. So she's, of course, like, I'm not an alien. Like, what are you guys talking about? However, it is intriguing because what you're seeing when she's locked away in this basement of this home in this like little country nowhere's town in the woods where they're keeping her. It's like, if this happened to anybody, if somebody kidnapped you, Tanaya, and shaved off all your head, knocked you out, shaved off all your hair, and you wake up in chains and they're telling you you are alien, aren't you going to be like ballistic, like emotional, like, oh my God, what are you talking about? Oh, I'm not an alien.
I'm
going
to play along so they can release me.
Well, okay. So I guess, you know, so that's what you're seeing her do. To me, I felt like she was too calm. It just, she wasn't emotional enough to me where I'm like, so at that point I'm like, okay, this bitch is alien. So now I'm tapped in to the rest of the film because I want to see if she is an alien, how is she going to reveal herself? It has to be amazing, right? It's got to be sci-fi, got to be visual effects. She got to be an alien, okay? Girl, get all the way to the end of the film, okay? Ends up, I'm just telling y'all, because at this point, it's like, I felt like I wasted my time. The guy, Jesse Plemons, he's the main character who is like going after her. She ends up getting him to go into her like machine where her mothership. He gets off, okay? Now they're taking her to the ambulance because again, they finally got back this successful businesswoman that she's been missing. And come to find out, of course, yes, she an alien. But when she goes to her planet and now you see her with her alien crew, it just was so underwhelming because it was basically humans in furry costumes, regular human faces, regular human heads. They each have like long hair. So they were basically telling her like, oh, we were trying to communicate with you and we couldn't because you don't have your hair. But it was just like, what? This is not... I wanted to see some real alien shit now. This isn't alien enough for me.
It was underwhelming.
It was very underwhelming. I would compare, there's another movie I did recently watch on Hulu called The Astronaut, which I hate that it was called The Astronaut. It should not be called The Astronaut. You should save that title for a movie where it's really about being an astronaut, not a movie about a woman who just, the movie is never even in outer space. Okay. The movie starts off where she crash landed back to Earth from being in outer space. Her, you know, the little glass tube that covers your face in outer space, it's cracked open. So it's like, oh my gosh, how's this thing cracked open? And she survived and she's not dead or whatever. Long story short, she's an alien. Okay. And now when she turns back into her alien self at the end of the movie, that's the alien I was expecting Emma Stone to turn into at the end of Begonia. So I think they should have switched. Okay. I think they should have switched. But ultimately, in the end, I feel like Begonia was not a good movie. I feel like it was a waste of time. I feel like you just did a lot of dialogue, talking. You spent all the money on that closing scene because basically they knew she was an alien and that she was going to end life as we know it on Earth. And basically that's what she does. But the way that she kills everyone, everyone just basically freezes in what they were doing. And so the final closing out scene of this movie is just everyone frozen in what they were doing. No blood or no, you know, nothing. It's just everyone with their eyes open like, oh, yeah.
So yeah, this seems kind of underwhelming.
It's very underwhelming. I think all of the money went to hiring Emma Stone, hiring Jesse Plemons. And that closing scene of getting everyone to just act like, oh, and like all these different scenarios of life. Yes. So, yeah, that was my piss poor.
Not watching this movie.
Yeah, don't watch it. It's a waste of time. Okay, so now it's time to be nice again. And share praises for those that we are rooting for as part of our yes segment. So who you got, best friend?
I am rooting for Rachel Zoe. Yes. As a honest person who does not watch The Housewives of Beverly Hills, because why?
Right.
Her clip of kind of confirming to her two young children that her divorce is final with her ex-husband, Roger, is just so heartwarming. She sat them down. She said, you know, it was released in the news. I want you guys to hear it from me first. She was very honest about they were separated last year and they did a year separation. She asked them You know, how do you feel? And it's interesting to see their take. They're kind of like, you know, he was never really around anyway, but now you just seem like a little bit more happier. I've never seen, at least that I can recall, a housewife kind of putting that on Front Street, how they are dealing with divorce and separation with young kids. And she said that one thing that she lives and dies by is that she thinks that she knows that children would rather two happy separated parents than two parents trying to make it work together. And you just see the young kids, like, they're taking it in and they're really listening to her, and she gives them this open mic. So I just want to applaud Rachel for one, putting her business out there, two, being honest about it, and three, letting them know, like, I'd rather you see it from me than it go viral. And the kids are like, well, we didn't hear about anything. But she's like, good. I still want to let you know from my mouth that we are officially breaking up. So kudos to you, Rachel. Thank you for just being honest and forthcoming. We need more of that.
Literally, we need her on the show. If
I
it
heard, I heard.
wasn't for Rachel Zoe, this season is just, oh my God. It's just so unbearable. There's nothing there. I had to begonia it and just, I'm just
Begonia.
hurt. I just fast forward. I fast forward through Dorit sit down with Bose and Kyle sit down with Sutton, where they're just talking about each other, because it's like, girls, get over it. There's this drama is dry as shit. They're both going through divorces. It's just like, stop it. But what you do see is Kyle is so freaking messy. She is that friend that you will open up to, and she's quiet the entire time you're talking. And it is because she is judging you the whole time. And she'll say what she's really feeling in her confessionals. And that's how it's like, I could tell why people will go to a reunion with so much smoke and animosity towards Kyle, because you're seeing all these things that she said that she didn't say in your face while she was trying to act supportive. When it's like, you're not supporting me. You really, like, she says, Dorit is shopping too much and she thinks it's because of her divorce. Like, what? Then,
Well, and so what? Last spin. What's the
and
problem?
okay, and
She ain't
then
doing
both.
drugs.
And then we know Bose is a boss. And so Bose had, she arranged the trip to Italy, and Bose sent her stylist ahead of her to arrange her closet because she got it like
Period.
that.
Period.
And Kyle's like, Bose is really bougie. And she says it in a negative way, by the way, like, not like, a positive. It's just like, girl, why are you a hater? That's probably why Mauricio was cheating on your ass the whole time and he left you and he's with like fun girls, because it's like, you're a hater. But yeah, shout out to Rachel Zoe, because she is the only one holding it down on this season. They really have to do a complete overhaul, because there is nothing there. Like, literally nothing there. Sutton got to go for show. Like, Sutton been needed to go. Kyle been needed to go. What are y'all doing? Why is she here? Please free us. Free us, please. But okay, I didn't need to drag, but sorry.
Yes, who you rooting for?
Two, just like I had two on Piss Poor, I have two that I'm rooting for. The first is Scary Movie 6 trailer.
I can't wait.
The Wayans bros. Okay, so they are back like they never left. They got the rights to their film back from the Weinsteins, and the trailer looks so phenomenal. It's all the elements that we know and love from the original two Scary Movies. You're seeing all the characters, literally all the characters back
I
from
love
the
it.
first one, which is so good. I really want to see what they do with this role, what fans are, and then you're seeing the spoofs on, like, just all, like, the ones I could recognize were Megan, Megan, the little killer doll, and I believe Long Legs, and there's also Weapons, which is a great film in there. And then we know with Scary Movie, they don't just only spoof horror films, they just spoof popular culture. So there's going to be a lot of different references that we see. And so what you're seeing with Ray, which is played by Sean Wayans, and his character has always been down low gay.
It's just so funny.
So what people correlated in on social media was the outfit that Ray is wearing when they spoof Sinners and the vampires come. And they're like, oh, we're not trying to be halfway gay. And then Ray comes, he's like, why just halfway gay? The outfit he's wearing is the same outfit as the guy who was at church and said, I am delivered.
So they're probably going to play off of Ray, you know, and his sexuality, probably acting like he's not gay, but we know, Ray, that you gay. I can't wait. And Kim Wayans. Kim Wayans is in it as well. You see her cameo. They do a clip of it at the trailer, the extended trailer. You got to watch to the end. So shout out to the Wayans. We love them. They are Black excellence. They really are pioneers in a lot of the spoof comedy films that we see. I mean, shout out to the late, great Leslie Nielsen. You know, we would see that with his Naked Gun films. But even before Naked Gun, well, Leslie Nielsen was in a spoof film back in like-
Airplane,
yes. Mm-hmm. So that came out in like the late 70s. So that was like the start of like, and then also we have Mel Brooks, who is a comic actor. He had already did it as well. I believe in like the 60s, 60s, 70s. So there was that. But then what you start seeing by the 80s, you get Hollywood Shuffle, which mm-hmm. is Robert Townsend. And he also like was his writing partner was Keenan Ivory Wayans. And so Keenan Ivory Wayans drops I'm Gonna Get You Sucker in 1988. And that was the start of what we know as, you know, Don't Be a Menace and Scary Movie and White Chicks. And, you know, the start of this, the Wayans family, their emergence in film and comedic film. So really, really happy to see them back on their screen, on our screens. That's one movie. I mean, we have two movies so far that everybody is coming out to see. Of course, it is the Michael Jackson biopic. Mm-hmm. And Scary Movie 6. Black People is coming out to play this year to the theaters, like
we did. And Marlon did say that if this does as good as they expect it to, then we will get a White Chicks 2, and I think we will get another Don't Be a Menace to Society.
Yeah.
So yes, he said that if this does what they think it's gonna do, they even pushed out the release date. It was supposed to be like the end of June, but now it's the beginning of June. Ooh. So I'm gonna go see it in theaters because I want a White Chicks 2. There's a lot of white women we need to impersonate.
Yeah.
And I definitely think you can still do a Don't Be a Menace. I think that they're really good at doing it. So shout out to the Wayans.
Right. And then my last yes is going to Jane Doe and Kenya Pleaser. If you could remember when we were talking about season 17 of RuPaul's Drag Race at the start of this season, we were saying who our favorites. And I said from jump that Jane Doe and Kenya Pleaser were my two standouts. I did drag Kenya a bit because, you know, her runway is just not there, but her personality is. And the fact that she's still in the competition, she has been up for elimination, I believe, like 4 times. And she makes it each time because she delivers and she just has personality. It's proof that personality really gets you far. You know, we've seen past queens win, you know, that weren't the look queens, the Bob, the drag queens, the Jinx Monsoons. You know, their Rue is all about the uniqueness, nerve, and talent. And it encompasses all those things. Of course, you got to turn a look on the runway, but sometimes that just isn't everything. So the fact that Kenya Pleaser is still thriving, and then Jane Don't, I think she really brings a unique element to the show. She is that comedy queen, but man, oh, she turns those looks on the runway. She's not, to me, the best lip syncer, but she still delivers in every other way on the challenge. So the fact that they were my two starting out and they're still going, I am going to be so impressed if Kenya Pleaser literally makes it to like the top three. Like I'll be like, wait.
Oh, I know. Imagine.
Yes. Yes. But regardless, I do believe Kenya Pleaser is Miss Congeniality for this season. I would be surprised if someone else gets it. And the only way I think she wouldn't get it is if she makes it to like top three, because they usually don't make Miss Congeniality someone who's in the top three. But I don't know. I think she.
I do think like Lala restarted like the Boot Award for Worst Dress. I think you should have a Kenya Pleaser Award for drag queen who does not know the words, because every lip sync I see a watermelon. Every lip sync I be like, oh, she don't know all the words. So I do think we need a Kenya Pleaser Award for that drag queen that did not know the words to her song.
Right. But shout out to both of them.
Yes. Another one.
Okay, period. But yeah, don't forget to like and subscribe, rate and review, follow us on social media at We Watch Too Much TV, TEA with the letter V, on all social media platforms, and stream us on whatever streaming platform, because we on all of them.
And so this is our episode before our season finale. Next week will be our season 6 finale, and we won't be back until the fall. So we're going to leave you with some good affirmations and mantras with some positivity. Okay, what you got, best friend?
There's power in allowing yourself to be known and heard, in owning your unique story, and in using your authentic voice. There's grace in being willing to know and hear others. From my forever First Lady, Michelle Obama.
Period.
Still Women's Month.
Okay, yes. My quote is short and sweet. May this season be a soft undoing of all the chaos that's lingered way too long. From Soft Girl Diary on Pinterest.
That's beautiful.
All right, period. And we got to get to this closing slogan because I have a one-year-old that is flicking the light on and off because she sees that I'm distracted. Okay.
She said, feels like another one. All right. And our closing slogan is love, abundance, and hair bundles to you people. Thank you very Yay. Much. Have the best week, and we will see you next week.
Bye.